And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome to today's show. We're very busy planning our time at next week's 45th Vancouver International Wine Festival. We'll be broadcasting live from our spotlight stage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights, as well as Saturday afternoon. And we've got an amazing lineup of guests who will be on our stage throughout the entire festival. You know, they hail from around the wine world. There's too many to mention. But a few that you might be interested in, some of them are the top winemakers and wine principals who will be in the room, and they're going to be with us on the stage. Led by Sandro Bottega, Mr. Prosecco, innovative, legendary vision, and an electric personality. Of course, Bottega is famous for its Prosecco bottles that you see in the store. They're gold, they're rose-colored, they're silver. It's just a fantastic collection and a great story behind those bottles. Eduardo Montresor will be with us. We're going to talk about the great Italian red wine, Amarone. The list goes on and on. Of course, we have a host of winemakers from the Okanagan, from DeSilva Vineyards, from Masoyas La Rose, and Camip Cellars, Kalmana. They'll all be at the show. We'll also take you to Villa Maria in New Zealand. We're going to visit many producers from around the world, and all of them usually have a unique story that we love to talk to them about for just a short period of time. And of course, we'll highlight one or two wines from these wineries throughout the interviews that you'll be able to either taste at the show, buy at the show, or perhaps find in your local wine shop where you live. So you won't want to miss that. I should mention that if you're coming down, don't forget to eat before you get here. It's always a great plan to have a full stomach when you go into that tasting room to take on all those wines. And you can check out, there's so many great restaurants near the convention center, two that are located right at our home hotel location, are in the Weston Bayshore, Vancouver, and that's H Tasting Lounge. It's a great choice for a special Vancouver experience, or the H2 Kitchen and Bar, which is another fun choice to grab a bite to eat. Now, by the way, don't forget, Gismondi on Wine newsletter is out this week. It's really your definitive guide to the festival this year. It's free. All you have to do is go to Gismondi on Wine and subscribe. One of the stories this week will be an insider's guide to the International Tasting Room, where I challenged our team to go through the list of wines. They've come up with some great topics, like an Italian smorgasbord. That's where you're going to look at a variety of wines from Italy. Seek out sparklers. Treve Ring, who is our sparkling wine specialist, has picked out the best sparkling wines in the room. There is no champagne this year. H.J. Cha has a look at Chardonnay for you. I've done local heroes as well. Italian whites beyond Pinot Grigio. So much there. Sign up. It's free. Subscribe over at GismondiOnWine.com. Now, on the show today, and it's action-packed, Shane Taylor joins us. He's the wine director at Rogers Arena and Top Table Restaurants. We're going to talk about the many, many wines you can buy, and you'd be surprised how many are down at the Canuck Games. Kevin Rossian, he's the GM and viticulturalist from Terralux Estate Winery. A new project opening in West Kelowna. We'll go through that with Kevin. Ann Sperling joins us to talk about the possibility of making wine, transporting wine, and generally shifting wine back and forth across the country. It's a fascinating conversation. But up next, Corey Kriebel, the chief winemaker from Frind Estate Winery, joins us to talk about her new plans for the future at Frind Estate Winery. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and you are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. The place for winter adventure and Okanagan wine. Enjoy champagne powder and après-ski at Apex Mountain or Baldy Resort, or step into cross-country skiing at Nickel Plate Nordic Center. After a day in the snow, slow down and experience one of over 80 nearby wineries with an intimate winter wine tasting. Before you go to Penticton, make sure to check the website for information on tasting room hours, winter highway, and ski hill conditions. And for more trip inspiration, go to visitpenticton.com.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at dioravines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show across the province of BC on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest today is Corey Kriebel. She's the chief winemaker at Friend Estate Winery. We're so excited to talk to you, Corey. Welcome back to the wine business. It was a short departure.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Anthony. I'm glad to be on the show today.
Yeah, great to have you. I mean, many of our listeners will know you from your Mission Hills days, but you've only moved down the hill, not too far. In fact, to a historic property at Friend Estate. What's it like? I guess that's my first question. With someone with all your talent and experience going to a new winery, what do you do or what don't you do in those first few months?
Absolutely. I mean, it's always exciting to come into a new opportunity and see how things are done at another winery to start with. And I would say the very first thing is to come in with an open mind and also to learn. And so Friend is definitely on the forefront of technology and also has vineyards that span from up in the Vernon area all the way down to the Asturias border. So almost, 200 kilometers of difference with very different soil types, very different climates, very different expressions of the fruit. So, when you first go in, it's all about learning. So it's learning the vineyards, it's about learning the technology, the people here, the wines, the style, and then really going from there and creating your own, I guess, print on the wines in collaboration with the owner and the direction of the winery.
Yeah. Well, if I'm standing back and looking at Friend, to me, it's a very friendly place. It's a very social place. People go there. They seem to have a great time. You've come out of a bit of a structured Appalachian sort of terroir soil based business up the hill. How do they come together? Do you have to change, or do they have to change, or is it just another curve in the road?
Absolutely. I think, in some ways it's a curve in the road. It's a way of being very adaptable. Also, with the different sites that we have here, we do have a different tier of wines as well among our premier series of wines.
Right.
And we'll also be looking at coming out with another label in the future as some of our northern vineyards come on site or come online.
Yeah. Okay, well, we can't continue this conversation without talking a bit about the grapes that took a beating across the Okanagan earlier this year from a deep freeze. What's your view at Friend, and what do you know, and what can you expect coming up this year?
Most definitely. It is a challenge for the wine industry for sure, and it's something we haven't seen cold like this essentially since 1990. So it's something that as an industry is relatively new to us and something that we're learning quite a bit about right now. So at this stage, it's still fairly early in the season. We've gone through and done a number of bud counts. The mortality is not looking good in the north, in our viniferas. And so for those, we're going to be taking the approach of cutting them back fairly aggressively to set our trunks in place for the future. In the south, we are seeing some, bud viability there, or some live buds down there. And so for a lot of those, we'll be waiting and seeing, similarly to, you know, what we saw a couple of years ago where it got incredibly cold, you know, that minus 29 event that we had 2 years ago. We ended up seeing better growth and better production volumes than what we actually were anticipating. So, you know, with any luck, we will be seeing some grapes out of the Southern Okanagan for us here. It yep. won't be anywhere near what our projections were. And then the interesting thing as well is we have hybrids at the winery here too. So we do have a little bit of Foch and a little bit of Regent, and those, the viability was just fine. So it's interesting to see that the hybrids were able to withstand the cold.
Yeah. Our guest is Corey Kriebel. She's the chief winemaker at Frind Estate Winery. Corey, your owner, Marcus Frind, he's been called a disruptor more than once in his business life. And when I met him years ago, when he proposed that he would build this winery, I thought, this guy's crazy. Like, he didn't know anything about wine, although he came out of a farming background. And I thought, how is he going to do this? And yet he's accomplished so much in such a short period of time. So I wonder, what's it like? I wouldn't say you're a conservative person, but working with a disruptor, does it give you energy? Does it scare you? Does it make you want to get to work every day? How will that work out, do you think?
Oh, that is such a great question. So absolutely, it gets me incredibly excited to get to the winery and to try on new things. You know, Marcus is absolutely pushing the boundaries, you know, where we're planting, the technology that we're using, the state-of-the-art lab. And yeah. it's that license to be able to use technology and try things from a, you know, vineyard perspective as well, to really drive our industry forward, to drive our wines forward and produce, you know, the best that we possibly can.
I had the most amazing experience there, and I'm guessing that's continuing. They were virtually deconstructing the best wines in the world at Frind. They were buying the best wines and then running them through a machine, which was far above my pay count, to take those things apart to see why the wines were so great. In the meantime, they were all tasting the wines as well. Have you been involved in any of that yet?
Absolutely. We have started that, and I have had the chance to taste a couple of times with Marcus, which has been incredibly fun. He has so much energy and is so excited as he's tasting through our wines, and we're trying them and also some international wines as well. And it's having the lab that we have, you know, I've been able to have a little bit more of an in-depth look as to what our wines are doing, you know, with bound anthocyanins and really looking at how the numbers correlate with what we're actually tasting on the palate. It's quite incredible to see that correlation.
Wow.
And put a number to it.
Yeah. Well, we know there's going to be some damage, so I'm assuming that you're also going to be involved in the planning now. Can you tell us a bit about your stocks of wine and how perhaps Frind is going to operate over the next 2 or 3 years, what the plan might be?
Absolutely, I can. At least at this stage, you know, it is still early days, so we do have some inventory, but absolutely we don't have the inventory to be able to hold over, you know, 2 to 3 years by any sense of the means. And so for us, it's going to be really, and I'm assuming similar to a lot of wineries, is ensuring that we focus most on our most profitable channel, which is direct to consumer. And so that's, you know, through our wine clubs, through our cellar doors here, and really supplying those that come to the winery too, and our wine club members.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another thing. It's not really in your bailiwick, but perhaps it is as chief winemaker. I know that Marcus has been on about some of the rules and regulations in the way that wineries operate, and he feels that their hands are tied. For instance, I love this idea of being able to taste wine or to enjoy wine anywhere on the property without having to issue new licenses. What is that all about? What's it called? TESA, Temporarily Expanded Service Areas?
Yes, that's correct. And so, you know, coming into the climate that we're in right now, where it is going to be challenging for wineries, Mm-hmm. People are going to have to be more creative to bring visitors to their site, to be able to sell through the cellar door. And right now there's very restricted areas that you're actually able to either serve food or allow sale and sampling of wine.
Right.
And so what we'd really like to see is that be expanded so that, you know, you can allow the sale and sampling throughout the winery property and not just in specific areas.
Yeah.
You know,
have a tagline like
patio section.
Yeah. The tagline could be, what's the big deal? Like, I always like to ask these people, well, what's the big deal? Come on. And there is no big deal,
yes.
But they have some ridiculous law. Anyway, the other question I have for you, because I don't want to run out of time, was I'm going to talk to Ann Sperling today. Of course, she's in Ontario. Could we not purchase grapes from Ontario? Like, let's move all the impediments out of the way. Would you not be interested in, say, some single vineyard fruit from Ontario if it met your standard and you could make wine from it? Could that not work when needed?
You know, honestly, it's something that historically I maybe have been a little more closed-minded to, but now, given the economic impact of our industry and the number of jobs out in British Columbia, we need a way to be able to get through this particular time. Mm-hmm. And I think where it really comes down to is truth in labeling. I think provided that, you know, the label is very clear as to where those grapes are coming from, that when we come across severe seasons like this particular one, we need a way to ensure that our industry actually survives.
Well, I for one, you know, as a wine nerd, I guess, would say I would like nothing better than to see a Corey Kriebel Niagara Bench Chardonnay, and I wouldn't think 2 seconds about it other than, okay, that's where it's from. She made it. It's probably going to be great, as opposed to, oh, well, Ontario wine, we can't have that in B.C. You know, we're all from B.C. Like, I think it's crazy. We live in Canada. There's Canada, there's B.C., there's Ontario, there's the Okanagan, there's Niagara, and then there's all the sub-apps under that. It's not that difficult to solve, if we really care about wine. So it's possible, right? I mean, technically it's possible as well.
Technically, it's possible. It would involve a changing of licensing.
That's a bunch of baloney. In Australia, you can ship it anywhere across the country, so that's on the politicians. But technically, you can make a wine in Ontario and get it safely to BC and put it in a bottle, I'm sure. Or bottle it in Ontario.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter.
Yep, we could ship it across, no question.
Okay. I don't want this to be about me, Corey. It was so great to catch up with you today. And we're excited to come up and visit you at Friend. And Friend is open at the moment. We should mention that. What can people do if they're heading to Friend now?
Yes, absolutely. So our tasting room is currently open. We also have our dome dining until the remaining of March. So we have the dome set up outside and happy hour from 2 to 5 p.m. and a la carte style dining after that. And they seat 2 to 8 people. We also have a perfect pairing, which is an opportunity to taste our wines and pair it with a sweet or savory item on March the 16th and 17th. And then we'll also be releasing our new 2022 Chardonnay in March. So a
right
few
on.
Different things happening around the property.
Corey, thanks so much. Can't wait to catch up with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
That was Corey Kriebel, Chief Winemaker, Friend Estate Winery. Still ahead, Ann Sperling, a highly sought-after Canadian consulting winemaker and owner winemaker of Versado, a project in Argentina. She joins us to talk about the big freeze and what, if anything, other regions can do to help out.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Attention wine connoisseurs. Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature-controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
Escape to Tin Horn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Golden Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
People always ask us, how do you taste? What we don't do is taste one wine in isolation. We choose a grape or a style of wine, then we taste a number of samples from around the world, so we're constantly benchmarking the quality of, say, BC Chardonnay versus Burgundy, the Sonoma Coast, Argentina, or New Zealand. That way we get a better picture of where that wine sits globally, and our readers often benefit from getting more wine for less money. I'm Anthony Gismondi. Why not compare wines with us at GismondiOnWine.com.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Ann Sperling, consulting winemaker, owner, winemaker of Versado, an Argentine project, and many other things in between. And of course, Ann is ex-British Columbian, living in Ontario now. Great to catch up with you, Anne. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks.
We miss you, Anne.
Well, I'm not that far away.
I spent far too much time.
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, okay. Well, for people who don't know you, maybe we could talk just a little bit about your early history, because you've done some great stuff in BC, including, like, I guess we first met at Cedar Creek. It was probably the first time we met, which is quite a while ago.
Yeah, I started my wine. Well, I grew up in a vineyard in the Okanagan, of course, in Kelowna, and then after studying and getting my degree, I worked starting in 1984 in the wine industry, and then became winemaker at Cedar Creek in the sort of 90-91. And that year actually was a winter injury situation where especially the estate wineries, which were, you know, few in number at the time, but just sort of fledgling, were, you know, asking the provincial government for some way to survive because of winter injury, and the crop was going to be too small. So we're, you know, kind of full circle on that one.
Full circle, yeah. Well, it's one of the reasons why I did want to talk to you today about the deep freeze we've had in BC, but more in particular because I know that there had been some talk about finding grapes elsewhere, including outside of the country, which I think is completely nuts, or decommissioning land-based wineries and making them commercial wineries, which I also think is nuts. But I don't think it's nuts to maybe get some grapes from Ontario if they have extra. Is it possible?
From a winemaking standpoint and a logistical standpoint, it's entirely possible. I mean, you know, grapes and wine move in every country, and, you know, even though it's maybe not common knowledge, I mean, they have been moving across the borders in both directions. There's examples, and there's been, you know, Ontario grapes going to Nova Scotia when there's a need, especially, you know, climate related. And so actually, I was just chatting with Brian Schmidt, another BC import to Ontario in the winemaking side. And he's been doing a lot of work, like not just talking about the theory, but in practicality, are there the companies to do it and what resources would we need? And so really, like, you know, moving produce is a lot less complicated from a regulatory standpoint. So if we were to consider like shipping grapes or must, you know, something that's not fermented, you don't have, right, you know, alcohol to consider, but there's, you know, quick freeze operations available in, you know, at least a couple of examples in Ontario that, you know, you normally are set up and working for cherries. And of course, as we know, the cherry season will be well finished by the time grapes are being harvested. So that could be a way to very quickly get the hand harvested grapes into, you know, a cool state. And then there's, you know, the normal kind of trucking or train transportation would be like 3 to 4 days, but it could be possible to get that down to 2.5 days. So, you know, when you think about it, there's, you know, a lot of producers are doing a cold soak that's longer than that. So so, you know, that's certainly possible. And then when you consider whether it's like bulk juice, for example, you know, there's a lot of producers that are set up to do volume and do, you know, all of those preliminary stages to get to a cold settled juice stage here in Ontario. And that's, you know, straightforward into food grade tankers that can traverse the country. And then, you know, and then it, and then there's also the either bulk wine situation where, you know, you could custom have somebody custom process for you and produce it to your standards, and then it gets shipped across in bulk, or even to the point of, you know, bottling and moving between the provinces. So it really, you know, I think if people are creative, if winemakers want to do this, you know, it's totally possible. And I think that there's plenty of interest and resources in the Ontario industry to make it happen. So
Hold on a second. Our guest is Anne Sperling. She's a consulting winemaker out of Ontario. Many of you know her from BC. That's exactly the way that I feel about it. Just a couple more questions because I have others I want to move on to. But do you not, as a winemaker, think, well, this would be great if I could buy some fruit from a special, you know, block in BC and just, you know, put it under our name in Ontario, or vice versa, we buy something off the bench and say it's from there. As a wine buyer, I'm excited as hell. Like, I mean, it's the same as buying a Burgundy from, you know, different parts of the country or parts of the region. And we need to get over these silos that we've built between the provinces. It makes no sense at all to me. And also, it's pretty rich when you think about it that the monopolies across the country can ship alcohol wherever they want, but the people who actually produce it can't. I mean, it just makes no sense at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, from the National Wine Awards that there's, you know, great wines being produced in each region. There's single vineyards and sub-appellations that are, you know, well recognized and becoming elevated over time as we gain experience and as our vines get older and, you know, all those kind of things. And, you know, while maybe there's some stylistic differences and some varietal differences, there's certainly single vineyards that are noteworthy and, you know, could be very interesting for producers across the country to work with.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Anne. Let's get on to more interesting stuff, but maybe more interesting for some people. Versado, you have a great project in Argentina. In fact, you're on your way there. I guess the harvest is coming up. Tell our listeners a little bit about Versado and why you're in Argentina and what you're making there.
Yeah, so with my husband, Peter Gamble, we kind of got the bug for Argentina early in the 2000s. So in 2006, we traveled there, and I was with a French wine consulting company, and so Peter came along to, you know, specifically to look at the opportunities for vineyards. And after, you know, we kind of went down an extreme rabbit hole of looking at over 200 properties and vineyards that had the potential. We settled on a very tiny but very old vines planting. So it's such a unique opportunity. It's Malbec, of course, grown in the zone that, you know, made Malbec famous in Argentina. But it was planted in 1920, a time when Argentines had money and were interested in the finer things in life. So it's own rooted, so 100%, you know, vinifera DNA. It's a Massal selection, and it's been, you know, producing fine wine on that site since, early on. So it was, you know, for for viticulture and winemaking geeks like us, we were, you know, totally hooked. And so we've been working to make about 6,000 to 8,000 bottles a year from, you know, this tiny property that that we can totally geek out on and see the, you know, the expression of the terroir from that place. Yeah,
and I know those wines, people can find those wines. You got to search around for them across Canada, but there is some of that wine coming into Canada, Versado, which is, and it's,
yep,
it's delicious.
Yeah, and it's available in BC right now as well, and, you know, I think a small number of retail stores.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, so you got that going on. Now, something even more intriguing to me was I have been recently tasting with a guy named Shane Munn over at Martin's Lane, who's making a Sperling Vineyard Riesling. How does that all come together?
Well, in 2022, you know, after a lot of tough decision making, my family, who owns Sperling Vineyards, made the decision to sell. I was, you know, managing the winery and the viticulture and the you know, label part of Sperling Vineyards, but that was sort of the only piece of it that I had, you know, much control over. So,
right.
So the decision was made to sell, and Mark Anthony Group were the purchasers. But as soon as I knew that there was, you know, I was pretty certain a deal was going to happen, Shane was the guy I called, because I've known him for years. We worked together in 2004 when he was a stagiaire at Malivoir, and but we became good friends, and, you know, over the years he's become, you know, such an amazing winemaker and working with single vineyard Riesling, so I knew that, you know, if he had those grapes, they'd be in good hands.
Yeah. And he, by the way, he was totally inspired to be an organic biodynamic guy by you at the time, which is, it's so great I think it would be so great for you to have someone like that out there now, you know, also sort of plowing those rows, if you like, and turning people into advocates for wine made as naturally as possible.
Yeah,
so.
I really think that, you know, organic growing and biodynamic for the future for viticulture,
yeah.
And that, you know, when we consider all of the things that we need to do to take care of our planet,
yep.
You know, I think that there's a lot to be considered with organic practices and
for sure.
You know, especially moving away from conventional and synthetic products.
Yeah. Anne, thanks so much for joining us today. Great conversations. And if there's anything that I can do to help get this country together and get on track to just worrying about making great wine instead of all the other crap that is thrown at the industry, I'm happy to help out.
Okay, yeah, no, that's good to have advocates in every corner, right?
Yeah. Thanks, Anne.
Okay.
Talk soon.
Take care.
Yep. Anne Sperling, she's a consulting winemaker, owner winemaker at Versado. It's an Argentine project, and you can find those wines in BC. Still to come, Kevin Rossian, he's the GM and viticulturalist of a new project, Terralux Estate Winery, that will open in British Columbia later this year. On demand anytime on all the major podcast platforms, this is BC Food and Wine Radio.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard. Now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, Marketing Manager at Visit Penticton. Apex Mountain, just 30 minutes away from Penticton, is calling you this winter. Joining me is Kat Bulkin, Sales and Marketing Manager at Apex Mountain Resort. Kat, what makes Apex such a great hidden gem?
Apex offers incredible terrain with over 80 runs, half that are advanced, and 4 terrain parks, plus short lift lines on our 4 ski lifts and dry champagne powder. We also host some fantastic events, such as our annual Brewski Festival.
Brewski, that sounds fun. Can you tell us more about that?
There's over 20 breweries, which will be showcasing their craft beers all through the Gun Barrel, and you're invited to sample as many as you want throughout the evening. Paired with food from the Gun Barrel Saloon and taking place on March 2nd from 6 to 10 p.m.
Amazing. Thanks, Kat.
You're welcome.
Plan your winter vacation to Penticton now. For information on Brewski and all other upcoming festivals, events, and activities in Penticton, go to visitpenticton.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome back to the show. Joining us now is Kevin Rossion. He's the GM and viticulturalist at Terralux Estate Winery, which you may not know that much about because it's not really open to the public yet, but will be later this year. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Really good to catch up with you. Now, I know that you're in charge of the viticulture, but why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? I know that you've come from Belgium. What's your wine background?
So left Belgium in 2000, so quite a while ago. Moved to Spain for about 8 years, was working in the industry, but more the hospitality side there for about 8 years, and arrived in 2008 in the Okanagan, and moved straight into the vineyards. So I've been doing this in around here for about 14 years. Mostly dedicated to vineyard. My wife, which is from here, dad has some vineyards. That's where I started. Been caring for grapes since then. Had my own company, worked for Elkhoff also as a manager, and starting working with Terralux in 2020.
Yeah.
Focusing on the vineyards first, and recently moving to GM, helping with the new winery coming up. I also had my own brand on the site, Plot Wine. So I've been in the vineyard, but also in the winery, doing a little bit of everything, and that's where
I love
that's
it.
Where I stepped up. Yeah.
That's a really great background. Viticulture, it's a good place to start. We've been talking to a lot of people. We'll continue to talk about what's going on in the Okanagan. What's your take on the big freeze and how the vines have or haven't survived? And maybe in the context of how we use viticulture in BC, or what kind of a grade can we get?
I mean, it's a difficult subject. I'm usually an optimistic person. So, I'm a little bit like everybody in the weed and see game right now, see what's
right.
Coming up in spring, hoping we get more coming up than what the report and the discussion's been. But it's definitely, I think, going to be a before and after 2023. It's difficult to say what we're going to do forward. I think, we're going to be focusing first on recovery, making sure that all the effort we've been doing until now is not in vain, and make sure that we're doing the right thing. It's true, there's going to be discussion about virals, some location, but again, just might be a bad pass. We lucky to have location in different places. We are all the way from West Kelowna to Coastal to Oakley Falls. So, every year there could be, some area that are more touched than others. This winter
sure.
Seems to be really overall in the valley. So it's a bit more spread. But,
Okay, Our guest is Kevin Rossion. He's the GM and viticulturalist at Terralux Estate Winery. Well, let me ask you this question, Kevin. Is there a difference between, say, planting vines that will ripen versus planting vines that will survive a cold winter?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, the discussion about, for example, using... hybrid, we got to look at what the market is also expecting.
Sure.
If we were to switch if we were to switch with like Vitis vinifera to hybrid, will the people still want the wine, you know, when like labor costs will still be pretty similar? So we're still going to have to make expensive wine in some way compared to other area of the world. We're making like wine made of the biggest varietal. So I don't think it's just about that. I'm not too worried about ripening in our case, because we have the right site and the right varietals in the right place. Mm-hmm. Our site in Coastal, for example, is probably one of the hottest sites in Canada, to be honest, and we will always be ripening there. It is definitely one of the ones that's been the most affected recently. So, but I don't think we would go and switch to hybrids, because we want to stay true to the wine than we like and what the markets want too. So I think there's that to take in consideration.
So let's get to Terralux. So Terralux, you built a winery in West Kelowna, or it's under construction. It'll be finished this year. What would you say is the focus of the wines that will come out of Terralux? Like, we're going to talk about three today, but what are you sort of focused on?
In West Kelowna, it's Chardonnay, like our main varietal there. But we also going to have some Pinot Meunier. Because we're going to be working towards a sparkling program. Our winemaker, Jacqueline Camden, recently joined us, heading the sparkling program, which it's going to be focused on the grapes coming from there. So Pinot Meunier and Chardonnay will be the main varietals over there, which we think it's the right place for that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
About 8 acres will be planted in those varietals there.
Right. And you mentioned the Similkameen. So what have you got in the Similkameen in the ground?
So that's where we have our Syrah and all the Bordeaux varietals. So predominantly we have Cabernet Sauvignon, which is really our flagship. We have been having great results with the Cab Sauv coming out over there. But also Syrah, which is about 12 acres, so quite a bit of there. And Viognier, which is the only white grown Similkameen. Other than that, it's all the Bordeaux varietals than you would expect. Merlot, Cap Franc, Cap Sauve, Petit Verdot. It's a rocky ground, beautiful exposure. It just bakes there in the summer. And like the entire Similkameen Valley, we have this wind which is almost constantly going through, which keeps the vineyards dry and really healthy in terms
disease-free.
Of
disease-free, yeah.
Exactly. Yep. There's a reason why so many vineyards in Similkameen are organic or very low intervention. It's the nature just keeps it that way. We always have this wind and this heat, which really keeps everything dry and hot, and humidity doesn't get a chance over there.
Yeah. And you in the vineyard, since you're growing it all, are you organic or are you sustainable? How would you characterize the way
sustainable, yes, and organic. We're not certified. To this day, we haven't found, you know, even if we were to be certified, I don't think it's something we would put specially on the bottle. It's just the philosophy we have. We haven't used any product, any fertilizer that is not fully certified organic. Since the beginning, so we do no tilling. We're really into the low intervention and try to keep the terroir and the soil as healthy and as natural as it is. You know, we have chicken roaming around. That's really our pest control and quality. So we've been this way since day one. In all of our vineyards, may be certified organic going forward, but today there hasn't been, you know, as important for us. It's mainly the way we want to be doing the thing.
Now, I know that Terralux is going to be at the Vancouver International Wine Festival, so people will be able to seek out the booth and taste some wines there. You'll be down there as well. What can you tell us about at the winery? Do you expect to open at what time this year, or when will you be ready for guests, or can you drop by now? Is there something set up there as well?
Not yet. So, I mean, construction has been taking a bit of a slow you know, like we really all started the construction when COVID came and everything was delayed a lot of, you know, we're all excited because what's coming out of it is going to be fantastic. But yeah, it's been a bit slow, but we will have this coming summer an outdoor experience and tasting will be available probably, you know, from spring, summer at the latest. But the full completion of the winery won't be until the fall or the following summer, depending a little bit on you know, how quick we can get that done. It took us, it took some slow steps there, but we're pushing now to get everything going. But yeah, we'll be there from, you know, we're hoping for May long weekend, but, you know, it could be a little bit after that, depending on how things go. But we'll be there this summer for sure.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, it's great to catch up with you and just get a few words about Terralux. It really is an outstanding project. People should check out the website. You can go to terraluxwinery.com and see what's coming. It's going to be an exciting new adventure in the Okanagan. And as I say, every year these wineries, some of these wineries that open are things that you couldn't even imagine 10 or 15 years ago would happen in British Columbia. So I'm very pleased to have talked to you. And by the way, I always have a lot of respect for the Belgian folks because they buy the most interesting Bordeaux in the world. They know wine inside out. So it's great to have Kevin. It's great to have you here in British Columbia, another little piece of the puzzle of people from around the world working in BC, which makes our wine great.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Yeah, we'll be at the booth 106 of the Wine Festival. I'll be there Thursday, Friday myself. So, yeah, no, I'm excited about this. And the project is just fantastic. There's so much coming up. Yeah. I'm really happy to be part of this and the team we have. It's a great project going on.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Anthony.
Yep, that was Kevin Rossillon. He's the GM and viticulturalist at Terralux Estate Winery. Don't forget, he has Plot Wines. You want to check that out as well. Up next, Shane Taylor, the wine director at Rogers Arena. We'll talk a little bit about the Canucks, top table restaurants, and high-end wines that people are drinking in BC at the hockey games.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Visit Penticton this winter for mountain adventures and South Okanagan wine. Experience the quieter time of year at one of the nearby wineries that stay open year-round and enjoy an intimate winter wine tasting. Stop into the Penticton Visitor Center for discounted lift tickets to Apex Mountain Resort for a day in the snow. Penticton is the perfect destination for your winter getaway. Before you go, check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and webcams for current conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
One of the best things about drinking wine today is that inexpensive wine has never been better. Helping you to improve your wine knowledge and find great buys in the marketplace has been a lifelong goal of mine because once you become a savvy shopper, you can influence retailers to start selling better wines at better prices. So learning just a little bit more about wine can improve the local selection in your neighborhood. I'm Anthony Gismondi and I invite you to visit us at gismondionwine.com to become a savvy shopper and drink better wine.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. We're back, and our guest is Shane Taylor. He's the wine director at Rogers Arena and Top Table Restaurants. Shane, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's. I think you're having fun this year. You have a hockey team that's almost as good as your wine list.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about wine. You know, we've been talking with Evan Goldstein about wine. He's got this big gig going on with in San Francisco with the Giants. But we're way ahead of him here in BC. Tell us a little bit about the history of getting wine into Rogers Arena.
Well, I'm very fortunate. I live in a community, in a city where wine is important. People demand the best in their glass, and we're happy to provide. So it's ever expanding, and we're pushing the boundaries and just bringing in more things. And as our guest palates expand, so it's fun. And I like to say a team winning makes the wine taste better.
Yeah, for sure. Now, it's not just some wine list of, you know, six wines and pick a wine. How many SKUs do you have? Like, how many wines are available, and where are they available throughout the building? How does it work for people?
So we have seven different wine lists in play. They're all different. They're all of varying sizes, and they're all set up differently. They're created to match the vibe of a club slash restaurant in the arena.
Right.
To match the cuisine. So we have a couple bigger lists. We have two bigger lists that are about 1,200 SKUs. They're a little different. And then we have some smaller lists in play. And then Sweets has a list. Sports Bar has a list. So quite a bit of variety. And we have 1,200 SKUs any one time. I have another 2,000 SKUs, give or take, waiting in the wings that will replace those available SKUs, keep it fresh.
Wow.
And then some wines just for our legacy program that I'm not going to touch for 20 or 30 years, or my successor will deal with. So
1,200 wines, that's impressive. And 2,000 ready to go. I mean, that's a huge program. Congratulations on that. So what kind of wines are they? Give us an idea of what's available.
I mean, you name it. Local wines, obviously, are available. We're blessed. I'm in the Okanagan Valley today, and we're blessed with having this world-class wine region in our backyard. Mm-hmm. Lots of wines from Europe, lots of wines from America. You would think we would sell 10-to-1 red wine to white wine, given us being in a hockey rink, literally.
Yep.
But it's probably about 40% white and sparkling and 60% red. So
yeah, that's good.
Coming out of the pandemic, our guests, our fans are really looking to explore regions they haven't been to before. We have four Somms on every hockey game, and coming out of the pandemic in particular, everybody wants to talk to a Somm. So we're very lucky, and we're very happy
Wow.
to have these conversations and take someone, if they want to go, to a new region or to a new wine.
Yeah. It's fabulous that people can get. I mean, I went to the games for 25 years and always wished I could have a decent glass of wine, and was always, well, there was no wine, and then it was sort of, you know, ordinary wine, and now you can get whatever you want. I think it's a fantastic deal for fans that are interested in wine, of course. And by the way, we're speaking with Shane Taylor. He's the wine director at Rogers Arena and Top Table Restaurants, of course, well known for their wine lists all across the province. Shane, it's a big building and it's cold in there, but where is the wine? Like, is it under the ice, or, you know, where do you keep all this stuff?
We have about 45 different storage locations.
45?
Inventory is a bit, so there's about 45 cellars. Inventory is, takes a week, it takes forever, but it's a good problem to have.
Wow.
And as it turns out, the arena, 250,000 square feet, is about 55 yeah. Fahrenheit, which is perfect. Year-round for storing wine. So I like to joke that I'm like a chipmunk with his nuts, and I'll open a random door sometimes. I'll walk in the room, I'm like, wow, I can store some wine in here. And
wow.
And I do.
I love it. That's fantastic. I imagine that people at Top Table wish they had 45 rooms to store wine in at their restaurants.
There's a little envy sometimes, I think. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that is amazing. So what about these Canuck deals, the Canuck players? Do they drink wine? Do they help you out? Can they show up in a restaurant? How does that work?
So they go to our Top Table restaurants a fair amount. I think we have a younger team, and I think when you're younger, they're still kind of exploring. We're not a seasoned veteran team, and I think the longer you play, the older you get, the more money you have. You tend to then get the wine
yeah.
bug. So we're not quite there yet.
Yeah. Well, I think that's pretty interesting. Is there any, like we talked about white and red, is there any wines in particular that consumers are asking for or reach for when they're there, or do they just dive in and explore the list?
A little bit of both, but definitely people want to talk to a sommelier. So that's great. And there's always someone available to give a recommendation or to take someone either to rediscover an old classic or go to a region they haven't been to before. So a lot of people looking to explore aromatic whites from Italy. There's all kinds of wines made in our backyard. So it's you never know where, you know, what's going to happen, where people are going to go. And tonight, for instance, we have Madonna at Rogers Arena. So there'll be a different sales mix, if you will, in a positive way. People will go and look at the list. So you never know. It's never a dull moment.
We do forget about that there's more than hockey at Rogers Arena, and of course with Madonna in the house, there'll be that'll be a different selection of wines for sure, but just as much fun. I find all this fascinating. I know that there's so much money in pro sports, and there's so many people in that building coming from across North America every night. What are some of these hardened pro hockey fans or scouts or people, general managers, what do they think of the program when they come to Rogers Arena?
To be honest, it's more a front now. We have a new club between the dressing rooms for the players called the President's Club. So the players, and there's a huge cellar that holds 4,000 bottles. And so the players, literally from visiting team or home team, when they're walking to the dressing room, they can't help but notice this huge wall of wine.
Wow.
So it's becoming more and more known, if you will.
Sure.
And I think it's great. We're lucky that our hospitality is come out of the pandemic robustly, and there's all kinds of creativity. And I was just telling this to someone the other day. It's amazing how many different wines that are available, and sakis and spirits in our market. We're only 5 million people, but the stuff that goes through our borders and is available is we punch above our weight, shall we say?
Yeah, for sure. We're talking with Shane Taylor. So great to catch up with you. I remember the days when the only wine that was talked about was the wine that was smuggled on the plane back by hockey players back in the day. I guess they don't need to do that now with a couple thousand SKUs sitting around in the building. That sounds great. Shane, well, thanks for catching up with us. So great to hear about what's going on at Rogers Arena, and that it's a part of the fabric of wine in British Columbia. So keep it going, man. That's the only way we can keep it going is by expanding to a broader and broader audience.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Tony.
Yeah. Our guest was Shane Taylor. He's the wine director at Rogers Arena and Top Table Restaurants. He's actually in the Okanagan today looking for some wine, as all of you should be this summer, because it's going to be a bit of a crush in the coming months to find BC wine in stores all over British Columbia. Well, that's it for this week's show. Special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Dwayne Bishop, assignment editor Sherry Caleb, director of operations Stu Ferguson. For all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismani, and I'm wishing you a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine. See you at the festival.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.